You're listening to Connect on blogtalkradio.com. Catch us on the web at umconnect.info. Okay, welcome to this latest episode of Connect. We're here with Drew McIntyre at Lake Junaluska. It's Saturday afternoon. Things are a little dead outside of the Harrell Center, but ordination services tonight, and we're recording this, and it will get on the air on Sunday at annual conference. So it is good to be here. Good to have you with us, Drew.
It's good to be back with you, Mike.
And you were somewhere with your wife this morning. Tell me about that.
Yeah, and last night. So my wife Brittany is a physician, and she's just completed her residency. So
okay.
Last night was residency graduation. So I drove back for that yesterday afternoon, and we had the festivities last night, and drove back up this morning.
Well, it is good that you could do that, because she would have really felt bad if you weren't there. And being here at annual conference.
Yes, I hate to miss any of annual conference, but it was not a difficult decision.
I think you're right. But we've, you know, certainly discussed what has happened in the last couple of days, and we know what's been going on, and you were able to check up on the website. Listen to podcasts. You know what's going on.
I've been following the hashtag and texting friends to get the lowdown, so I'm up to date.
All right. And so we thought we'd start off talking about the retirement service and the service of commissioning that happened on Friday morning. It's the kind of thing that you always sort of, the way I called it, we sandwiched business with worship and the commissioning and the service of retirement. Go hand in hand. It's interesting to look at the newest ones coming in and those that are leaving, and I know fewer of those coming in than I know leaving. You probably are the other way around.
It is the other way around for me, yes.
And so it is a fascinating service every year to see people that have been your peers and mentors leaving the ministry. Mm-hmm. Well, not leaving the ministry, but at least retiring from active service. Some of them will continue to serve churches in retirement, and some will continue to have ministry way beyond what they're doing in a local church. But, you know, you see folks that came in through seminary with you, and they might have been much older then, but it didn't seem like it.
Yeah.
And then, whoa, how are you walking across that stage now? How are you going to, you know, spend life in another place? And I talk to some, and they say, well, you know, it'll be nice to choose somewhere to go on Sunday.
Yes, I imagine. Now, I've said this a lot, and I wonder what your perspective is, Mike, but it does seem to me that hardly any Methodist pastors retire. It seems like most of them find something to do that involves a pulpit even after they officially, quote-unquote, retire.
There are certainly a bunch that do that. You know, serving here in the Smoky Mountain District and Lake Junaluska being here, we have many, many retired pastors living around the lake and around the area, and it is fascinating to see how many are still in ministry, real active ministry.
Sure.
The Campbells, and I served with them, and they weren't that much further ahead of me in terms of ordination process and all, but I'd served with them in the old Northeast District, and they've been living here for 15 years or something like that. And I saw them at a picnic the other night, and he's turning 80 this year.
Wow.
And they were telling me at the picnic, now, Mike, I know you're getting a pulpit. if you need someone, we'll still fill in. I'm thinking, wow. You know, at 80 years old, I'm just hoping to get to 80.
Oh, for sure.
But it's the kind of thing to see that desire to do that. And Bill Medlin was one of those. He was a former conference secretary and was just always active. And he came and he served the church where I'm going after retirement.
Oh, wow.
And then, he got moved again out to Crabtree, and he spent years out at Crabtree as a retired preacher and was just well-loved in the community. And, there are a lot of examples of that, of people not quite leaving ministry altogether.
For sure. Still have gifts and service to offer. I know in my district in Uwari, one of my next door neighbors for a while was George Roberson, who served New Union in retirement and was still a fantastic preacher, minister, was very welcoming to me as a new pastor in town. And certainly in UARI, we have a lot of retired clergy serving as well. And I really respect their wisdom and gifts and insight.
Right. So the group that's coming in as provisional members, how many of those do you know?
I know a few. One that I'm really excited about is my friend Nathan Fensel. Nate and I did First Parish Project together at the Hinton Center with Clarissa Fuentes. And so Nate and I have been friends for a long time, and I'm really glad to see him get commissioned and start that journey. And it's very exciting.
Yeah. Now, where is he serving these days?
Oh, he moved, and I just saw him, and he told me, I'm drawing a blank.
Yeah. So I know I remember him here in Cherokee County.
Oh, yeah.
He was serving out there when I was first working in the district, and I remember seeing him at district meetings and that kind of thing. And I just didn't know where he moved. And but yeah, nice guy. He's from somewhere up in New York, and ended up down here. And I always find that fascinating.
Oh, for sure.
Sort of like my wife, who is from Syracuse, New York, and I met her in Asheville, North Carolina, and she's managed to make this a home. And you know, we've been here 10 years.
Very cool.
Basically, so always interesting when we see folks from outside finding their path and their way here in the mountains of North Carolina.
And I'm trying to remember, Mike, maybe you remember better than I do, but there were, I think, some proposals at General Conference that would have finagled the commissioning ordination process. I think there was some efforts to move it back to maybe deacon and elder, move ordination back, but I think we all that stuff got turned down.
It did.
Yeah.
It's the kind of thing, because there were some concerns among a lot of folks that it takes so long to go through the process. And Bishop Hagia out of the Pacific Northwest, he was very big in talking about that openly.
Sure.
About how we just need to find a different way to do that. And, you know, it was certainly shorter when I was coming through. Mm. So you get ordained a deacon while you're still in seminary. And most people could come out and in a year or two after being in a parish, you could be ordained elder. And
wow.
It's a lot different than the provisional status.
Oh, sure.
And then moving on, and it can be a long process. Now, you know, part of my story is that it took me from 85 to 93 to go from deacon to elder.
Oh,
there's
wow.
not many that did that. I actually would have run out of time hadn't I made some moves. I'd have had to been readmitted again into the deacon
gosh.
Situation
yeah.
if I'd have not gone to my Board of Ordained Ministry quickly. But yeah, it was the kind of thing. I was not settled on did I want to be an elder or did I want to serve more in diaconal ministry. And I gave that a good thought. And it was while I was at Long's Chapel that I was basically convinced, not only by that congregation, but you know, by a couple of former bishops that were in
That'll
that congregation. And you know, when Bishop Ed Tullis takes you aside and holds you around the arm, and he says, "Son, what is the weight about? You're gifted. You're needed. Go ahead and finish it."
Wow.
Well, when you have that kind of support, it's time to turn
sure.
and go. But I've always thought, and it's still strange to talk about, you know, provisional ministry and all like that. That doesn't seem to
yeah,
work in my way
to
of thinking.
Probation and
right. But what I do like with this new system is that there is the permanent diaconate, which we didn't have. And that was part of the problem, too, is that during that time, it had been discussed at General Conference, not passed. It was 96, and we celebrated that today, the 20th anniversary of the Order of Deacons.
Fantastic.
But they had talked about it in 92, and they'd talked about it in 88. And I kept hoping that would be a possibility. And then at General Conference this year, one of the things that they did was say that diaconal ministers under the direction of a bishop can preside at the table, which is a little different way of thinking, too.
Certainly, yeah. And I think they clarified some things around that, because there had been some provisions about that before, but they weren't clear. I was excited. We didn't mention this in the last podcast, but I think someone we both know, and who's someone who's been a mentor of mine and was my youth pastor and very much involved in my own call to ministry, but Gloria Hughes was elected
right.
our chair of our Order of Deacons, which I was very excited yeah. about, along with Veronita Alvord, who was who mm-hmm. became chair of the Order of Elders. So those were neat. I do want to give a shout out to our Board of Ordained Ministry for this, because we, among young clergy, we'll talk a lot about how we're still one of the few conferences that does 3 years provisional time
right.
versus two. Most conferences have gone to two. But what I will say, and maybe you have similar stories, but my friends, for instance, in the North Carolina Conference, what I hear from there is, yes, it's 2 years, but they've added additional layers of hoops so that they're not, most of them are not getting through in
right.
2 years. So I actually don't think that us being three makes a much larger difference, to be honest.
Yeah, that's probably true. And since I was one of those guys, it took all of 8 years to do it. It wouldn't have mattered with me. You'd give me two, I'd have taken four, I'd have taken six. So very interesting thing. So, but I do think that when you add those extra hoops, it's going to take more time for a lot of people.
For sure.
Yeah. Let's take a break real quick, and I'll do some things. We'll come back and talk some more.
My name is Sally Queen, and I'm the Associate Director of Ministerial Services. By virtue of our baptism, we are all called into ministry. This call is being faithfully lived out in the communities of Western North Carolina as people of all ages participate in building God's kingdom. Others are responding to God's call to licensed or ordained ministry by committing to faithfully lead our churches in vitality. All who are called are using their talents and gifts to follow Jesus, make disciples, and transform the world.
Okay, we're back from that short break, and we're going to revisit the whole ordination process. It's always interesting to look back in the difference of the processes and the lengths of time, and it was interesting that General Conference had talked about those very things, and you were saying something about hoops. What was that
yeah,
about?
Yeah, well, and I wanted to revisit that, because I was reflecting on my experience with the board and the process that I went through a few years ago, and just how much I think improvement there's been in the last just last several years. And we heard some of that in the report the other day, and Ashley Crowder Stanley was very specific about that, and got a lot of deserved praise for the positive changes. I think both in tone and in content that the board has made. And I know I have a lot of friends in the board, and they're great people, and they don't like that language of hoops. If I said that, I meant to say steps, but I know in the North Carolina Conference there are some. They've added some steps to the process that essentially make it at least a 3-year provisional period, if not more than that. So, but I've been very, my most experience has been with the process here, and I think it's night and day. I was provisional under kind of the old system, and got fully connected mostly under the newer system. And that's night and day difference.
Oh, yeah.
So I've been very impressed with what they've done just in a few short years. Much like Lake Junaluska, just
in a
quadrennium, how much change.
Oh, exactly.
We can see.
And so my dealings with the board have been mostly with the technology that's being used. And so, you know, I can remember the old days and, you know, sending in videotapes and audio tapes and manuscripts on paper. And you know, you'd spend $50-$60 mailing your stuff out, and now it's all collected online. And you know, I was a little concerned when they came to me and asked, you know, how would you advise us to do some of these things, because not all of our Board of Ordained Ministry is technically aware
in
the same way that some of the younger ones are. But after that first year, and there were a few hiccups. And I was getting calls all the time, how do I do this, how do I do that? So the first year was a little tough on both candidates as well as the board.
Mm-hmm.
And the second year, you know, I probably went through 20 calls the first year. The next year, I had two.
Wow.
And that's how much it's changed. And that technical piece, getting manuscripts to where you can actually read them on an iPad, read them on your phone if you had to, is a whole lot better.
Oh, yeah.
than seeing those boxes of papers. And I always tell this story about Frank Grice, who was the guy that I was working with at Long's Chapel, and he was on the board. And Frank would travel around with a box of audio tapes in his car and listening to sermons. And,
wow.
And he'd always have a couple of boxes, one of papers, and he'd just shift them from the car to the office, office to the car.
Oh, gosh.
What a difference that must be in the whole review process. And so I think that that is greatly improved.
Definitely.
But I also like what I did know about this year's process and moving everybody to a committee that reads all the papers.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we do ministry. We don't do ministry in four blocks. And then it moved to three. And in the early days, we had four committees that we went through. And,
wow.
And then it's moved to three. And now it's moved to one committee handling all the aspects of the process. And I'm thinking that has to be better.
Definitely. It's what we do with the DCOM as well. And again, it's about getting a whole picture of the person, because we're not just a preacher and we're not just someone who's called and has a personal life, and we're not just a theologian. We're
right.
All that and more. So, yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
So I'm glad that that has changed. Wish I had gone through it all those years back.
I'm sure they'll let you do a victory lap if you want to.
I don't think so. I think I'm going to stay where I'm at. But it is a fascinating thing. So that was Friday morning, that whole idea of new provisional members coming in. And then we were talking about retirement.
Yeah.
And now that is a fascinating thing. And you actually have to be voted to retirement during clergy session. We talked about that in the last podcast. But to think that you're part of that community, you have to be voted out as opposed to just leaving.
Yeah.
And that's fascinating.
It's very Methodist, very Wesleyan.
Very Methodist. And then today, or I mean on Friday morning, that whole group of folks that we voted for to receive retirement, then they get to walk across the stage. And that's always fascinating. So Jock Ollis was the guy who did the sermon for the retirees. And Jock and I were in school together at Duke.
Oh, neat.
I think I finished before him. He was coming in, and he was, you know, a second career guy. But I always thought of him as a peer because we were in classes together and things like that. And he came out, and we served in the – he served in Canton, and I was at Long's Chapel. So we served there, and then he's moved along and done other things. You know, to see Jock Ollis up there, knowing he's retiring – yeah, makes you feel a little nostalgic.
I'm sure.
This is one of my peers, and they're going out. And that, you know, it's fascinating. And last year there were two or three folks that I finished seminary with that were retiring.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was a young guy when I finished seminary, but you never think that your peers in seminary are that much older than you, that they're getting to retire this year.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was looking at the wall, you know, the wall of former pastors at my current church, West Bend in Asheboro, and of course, I'm the youngest pastor they've had, but also everyone before me's retired.
Mm.
There's no one else that's, many who are active, but not, you know, not serving pulpits. So that was interesting to think about. And I do recall in previous years, you know, it's an interesting service because it's sad, but it's also recognition of good work done. And there are some retirees who just about float across that stage.
Yes, you're right.
Because they're very pleased.
I'm looking at this, and Susan Pendleton Jones, Greg's wife, retired this year.
She did.
That's what it says.
Wow, I did not realize that.
Yeah, and so they'll be moving to Texas, to
That's
Baylor.
Right.
But you know, she'd put in 30 years of service, and
yeah.
So she's retiring. Jack Knespel, I've served with him over the years. Sidney Lanier, another one of those that I spent a lot of time. Ken Lyon,
mm-hmm.
Stephen Johnson, and I'm thinking, wow, pretty amazing. Looking through the list, one of these days,
yeah.
Yeah, Jody Seymour is another one, you know, that's finishing. And it took him a long time to decide to retire. And he was doing such good ministry in Davidson. Sure. He probably thought about it, you know, for several years. And this was the year. And I'll bet you he's one of those that doesn't give up the ghost. He's going to be doing something pretty soon.
Oh, I'm sure. He's got so many gifts and interests around. I remember him doing a workshop for us in the provisional process on the Enneagram that was mm-hmm. fascinating. And I'm sure he'll be doing some teaching and mentoring. And,
yeah, I would guess so.
Yeah.
But it's always an interesting thing to see who's going to be off the on stage for the retirement. And then it was interesting that Julia Trantham spoke for the new class coming in. And I believe that she's the first deacon ever to give that address.
Oh, interesting.
And so Julia came out of Central Church in Canton. That's where my wife and I go to church on Sundays.
Okay.
And so her parents usually sit in a pew behind us, and it's fascinating. But, you know, I've had some dealings with her at Cullowhee Church, and, you know, just one of the bright and upcoming folks in ministry, and, you know, working with David Reeves out in Cullowhee.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a fascinating working life that they have, but it's the perfect setting for her. You know, young, working with the Wesley Foundation and that congregation.
Oh, yeah,
and
great.
Working in the community and service. It's powerful stuff, and she lives out that call to be a deacon very well in Jackson County.
Well, there's this beautiful kind of flow at annual conference with beginnings and endings and celebrations and remembrances, and the way that we incorporate the incoming ordinands to the retirement service and also to the celebration of life service is really beautiful. I know for me, that was one of the most touching parts of the day I was ordained, was that we helped honor those that were being remembered that year. And of course, this year, you know, we... Again, as always, we lost some beloved clergy who we celebrated today. One who's a friend of mine, and this was, we talked about the difference in you and I being longer in the system and younger in the system. Well, a dear friend of mine, Mike Burris, Mike and I were in the ordination process together and Riom together, and Mike died unexpectedly this year, and that was the first time for me that really someone I considered a peer in ministry died, and so of course we've been praying for his family and friends and his congregation. He's a great pastor, wonderfully gifted, did some great recovery ministries and had an amazing personal testimony. And I was driving back this morning, I was in communication with some of my Riom friends who all went to kind of honor him, but and I know I'm sure you have some too, but that's one that stuck out to me this year of just how beautiful this connection is, that we are careful both to celebrate those who are coming in, but also to honor those who have served well that are no longer with us.
Yeah, and I look at this group that we celebrated this morning, and a number of them, I served in the district with them. They were mentors to me, some of them, and it's always fascinating to look at this group. But, you know, one was Hal Finney, and Hal and I served in two different districts together and had a lot of dealings. And, you know, a grand guy and funny guy, and you just don't think that, you know, here's one that's missing.
Yeah.
You know, another one that we celebrated today was James Fowler, who was a professor, wrote the book on Stages of Fate.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
and, you know, he, you know, died during the year, and rather young fellow when it was all said and done. But, you know, he impressed upon a lot of people over the years, the whole Christian education perspective, and that Stages of Fate, you know, still hangs with most of us in some form or fashion.
Yeah.
Another one that I remember, Joe Reeves. And Joe, when I was serving at Camp Loy White, I was a very young director at Camp Loy White. I hadn't finished seminary yet, but I took a year off and some more months to be their camp director. And as part of the process, I think it was Maurice Ritchie at Duke asked me to get a mentor in the community that, you know, would sort of act as my my spiritual guide, those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And so Joe Reeves was at Central in Shelby, and so just down the road. And he was a guy that I could go to and sit in his office and, you know, hammer out, what does this mean to ministry? You know, I'm in a camp, and you're at Central Church. What wisdom do you have? And he would sit back and say, well, I don't know anything about camping, but I know this about people. Mm. And powerful stuff. And so to see him on the list this morning was a remembrance time.
Sure.
But, every year, and I think, you know, the older I get, the more of these folks I, you know, have had some dealings with. Mm. Been doing this, since 93 was when I was ordained an elder, but 85 as a deacon. And over the last few years, you know, there have just been numerous people that, you know, have been in my life and are now in the other world.
Yeah.
And it makes you think.
It's always a good reminder that we stand on the shoulders of giants.
No doubt. Well, let's take a little break, and then we're going to come back and talk ordination. Awesome. How's that sound?
Sounds good.
The United Methodist Foundation of Western North Carolina is a ministry of the church for the church, whose mission is to build the church for generations to come. We fulfill this vision by investing in people, as well as helping churches and related institutions invest the financial resources that God has given to them. My name is David Snipes, and we look forward to the day when you give your United Methodist Foundation a call.
Okay, we're back from the break. It's Drew McIntyre, Michael Rich sitting here at Junaluska, and we're going to close out this show talking about what happens tonight, and that's ordination service. So I know that you're going to be in it again this year. Last year we were talking, and it was Rennie Salata that you stood up for.
Yeah.
And it was interesting in that show, Amy was my DS and headed to the thing, and she was standing in, you and her, and I had you both on the radio that
night.
Yeah,
that was neat. That was neat.
So, and then we brought Rennie on the show for Saturday night. And so, again, Saturday you're here, you got your robe hanging up, and so tell us about who you're standing with this year.
Yeah, I'm standing with Clark Chilton, who's a friend of mine, who's being ordained a Full Connection deacon this evening. Clark is the youth pastor and leads worship and wears several hats at my home church, Clemens United Methodist Church. And his parents and my parents are in the same Sunday school class at Clemens, and so we've been friends. And so I was honored that he asked me to stand with him tonight. So I brought my Sunday best. I'm going to get gussied up here in a little bit.
All right.
I'm excited. Also worth noting that we talked about, and you interviewed Rennie last year. Well, his wife, Lauren Sims Salada,
that's right,
is being ordained Full Connection tonight. So that's special, real special, too.
All right.
So that'll be and a lot of great folks. A really great, I think, Full Connection class this year, and a testimony to great work done by the folks on the board and in the call and vocation team. And I'm sure it's going to be special to watch Bishop Goodpastor ordain as his last class, at least as a resident bishop.
Yeah. I think back, I can remember, you know, when Rennie and Lauren got out of seminary, and Rennie came to this district, and it was his first appointment, and I was working here in the district, and it's interesting to see. And I think back, and many of us who went through Duke in the 80s, I don't think that we're as ready as some of the group that are coming out now. Yeah, it's just a different mindset now at Duke. But I just feel like these new ordinands are prepared and ready to go. And the
Rion process now, we mentioned there's so much more preparation in that for some of the practical sides of ministry, and so mm-hmm. many resources now to pick up some of those things that we didn't get in seminary that it is very different.
Yeah, one of the things that was interesting, and that was Wednesday night, the clergy session, and you know, they're pretty much money is available. And money is flowing to young clergy, new clergy. And one of the, we talked about the budget yesterday, and I remember one of the clergy members of the conference standing up and saying, you know, I came through and didn't have any money thrown at me. And I thought, well, that's a very interesting thing. I look back and, you know, there was no way that I was going to Israel with the bishop because there was no money available. Yeah. And
it's also possible it wouldn't be a great time to go to Israel. When you were
well, there
to,
you go.
I don't want to throw that card out there. But
well, I can certainly understand that. But, you know, that called and gifted to lead, there are programs all over our conference available.
Absolutely.
And you and I both know that what you get in 3 years of seminary is not enough to serve a congregation.
Absolutely. It's just a start.
It is just a small start. You know, you get theologically grounded. You get biblically grounded. You can interpret the scriptures. But in essence, most of us took one preaching class. That's not enough.
No, definitely not.
That'll get you through the first month.
Yeah. You could use those sermons for your first month.
Right.
Then you still have to preach after that, though.
Exactly. But I'm just thinking about all the opportunities available to these new clergy. And I think that most of them are taking advantage of every situation that's given to them.
I hope so.
Now, sure. One of the things, because I'm the communications guy, and one of the things that I do here, because I send out a lot of emails, we put a lot of stuff out there, I hear, you know, I have too much to choose from. And you know, sometimes I've got to stay home.
Sure.
But there's a lot out there. And that, you know, that's the balance of figuring out how to be an ordained clergy and serve your church faithfully, is balancing all these opportunities to grow at the same time, be in a congregation and serve it well.
Absolutely.
And I don't know that I, you know, had that choice. You know, I would go to the Duke Convocation once a year, and and that wasn't enough. But
right.
That was what was readily available to me.
Yeah, and it definitely is a balancing act because there is so much being offered. It's an embarrassment of riches in some way. I did a program the last year and a half through Wake Forest, the Lilly Endowment funded program through the Divinity School, and that was a pretty intense program. So I had to make some choices about if I do this, I can't do this. I can't do two different retreat things. That's just too much time away. And
right.
And I'm trying to figure out. I'm going to a new appointment now, and I don't want to commit to a whole lot because I'm trying to start. And so.
Right.
But it's a great problem to have because there's so many good opportunities provided by the conference and related institutions.
Right. And the other thing, and Duke Endowment has always blessed us greatly.
Absolutely.
Here in Western North Carolina. And somehow over the last 10 years, they've come up with more money to bless us. And that was part of the report yesterday from Rob Webb and the Duke Endowment. It was powerful. You know, they're looking for things that make a difference. They're looking for things that will help you steal home to take that risky step that
Absolutely.
Will do something big, hit the home run, steal home plate. And it was just a powerful word from Duke Endowment to know that if you are wanting to be on the cutting edge, you wanting to do something that makes big impact, that they're going to support us even more. And that's happening over and over again. And clergy are getting opportunities to do many things because of the generosity of the Duke Endowment.
Absolutely. And I think this is worth, whether I'm sure we have laity that are listening to this and clergy that are listening to this, but if you want to do ministry, if you want to impact your community, if you want to, you know, make things happen, take some risks in your community, you know, what Bishop Schnese calls risk-taking mission and service.
Mm.
Between the Duke Endowment, between conference funds, district funds, there is money out there for ministry.
Mm-hmm.
Money is not a hindrance in our, I mean, this is an amazing statement. I don't think I'm saying too much here, but money is not a hindrance to ministry in our conference.
I don't think so.
You know, and that's an amazing thing to say, and we need to be more upfront about that and celebrate that and get that message out there, because I'm sure there are all kinds of folks that have ideas, but there are resources there if you want to do real ministry. Maybe not, you know, they're not trying to maybe build everyone a new fellowship hall.
Right.
But if you're trying to do ministry, the resources are there.
Yeah. And so, and that is the difference between the Duke Endowment of today and the Duke Endowment that I remember coming in.
Right.
There were a lot of fellowship halls and there were a lot of small churches built with Duke Endowment money.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's powerful stuff. But they're out of the building business these days.
Yeah.
But they are into building kingdom stuff. And that is an amazing switch. And we're all going to have to get used to that. But it's a good thing to get used to.
Definitely.
And, we as the church in Western North Carolina, we need to see that that's what we're about. It's not about buildings. It's not about facilities. It is about ministry in the community.
Absolutely.
And getting to know how to do ministry with that community.
Absolutely.
Not for it, with it.
Yes.
And so that's powerful stuff. And all that came out of a talk about ordination.
Man, we just about had a sermon there.
Yeah. We better record this, huh?
I hope you hit record, otherwise.
Okay. So anything else about ordination tonight?
No, just, you know, it'll be special to see Bishop Goodpastor with his last class of ordinands. That's a very special service. It's always endearing. It's always moving. Always good preaching, and an honor to, you know, stand for friends and loved ones and colleagues and watch them take that step and,
right,
and receive that blessing.
Yeah, I got to speak with Bishop Harvey, who will be preaching tonight.
Oh, cool.
And she was one of the more powerful preachers at General Conference. She is something else. She's a dynamo, and she stands less than 5 feet tall. She must be. She's just a tiny lady with this big voice, and yeah, that was the first thing, because, you know, you see her on stage, and you saw her on TV or on, you know, live stream, and she was bigger than life.
Yeah.
And then, you know, she comes up to about my waist, I feel like. And that is something when you see someone bring the gospel.
Sure.
And you got to remember that John Wesley was just a short little guy.
Oh, yeah. Well, it makes me think of Fred Craddock.
There you go.
Fred Craddock, real small fellow, but amazing storyteller, big presence in the pulpit.
And so every time I go into the World Methodist Museum here and stand beside the Wesley life-size replica, and I'm thinking, goodness, how did he preach to 10,000 people in a pasture?
Yeah.
Well, we're going to see it tonight with Bishop Harvey.
Great.
I think that she will bless us in a very powerful way, and that is the thing about ordination service. You know, I've had some sermons better than others, but most of them are just profound.
Mm.
And I have a feeling that's going to be the same thing tonight.
I'm looking forward to it.
And worship is always grand, and you know, you can't do much better than going back and remembering your baptism, that we're all ordained for ministry.
Absolutely.
And then this is just a special calling out of those to special gifts and services in the church. But, you know, it all serves around that idea of baptism and the table, and it all comes together, you know, tonight.
Absolutely.
So that's very cool. Well, we're going to have to close this out here shortly. What do you have to say? I know I'm going to give you a last word, and I'll sign us off.
Yeah, I'm going to head to an ordination party and celebrate with some folks here in the interim. I just want to say thanks again for having me, Mike, and thanks to the listeners. I also, you mentioned Bishop Hagia. I've interviewed Bishop Hagia for a podcast I do with a couple buddies of mine, Stephen Fife and Evan Roars Dodge, on the Wesley Cast. You can find that on iTunes, one word, Wesley Cast. I also blog at drewbmcintyre.com. I've written stuff for the conference blog, mm-hmm, and written stuff for Ministry Matters. So,
oh, reminder, you've got something for me for Monday.
I will have something for you Monday,
good,
one way or the other. So feel free to look me up on Twitter and Facebook. It's been a joy to be with you again here at annual conference. Thanks to the United Methodist Foundation for sponsoring this, and Mike for letting me sit here and talk across from you for a couple of days.
Well, it's always my pleasure, and like we said the other day, you know, we just need to talk to somebody at Duke and say, you need to have a podcast, and we'll be glad to start it off as alums.
I absolutely. I think as good alum, that's a great service we can render our alma mater.
Well, there you go. Well, thanks again for being with us and staying with us through all of our rants and
rabbit trails
and circuitous paths.
Preachers. That's how we talk.
We are, but it is nice to, you know, have this time and to be here at annual conference, and it's Saturday afternoon, so I'm going to kick my feet up a little bit before it all kicks off again.
Sounds good.
So thanks everyone for listening, and we'll be back the next time connecting United Methodists and their stories. Thanks to our sponsors, the Western North Carolina Conference and the United Methodist Foundation of Western North Carolina. You can find out more about them on the sponsors section of the website,
umconnect.info. I'm Michael Rich, and you've been listening to Connect.